So for today's conversation, I don't believe that we have a formal moderator. I had a moment of panic, I'll admit, when I thought to myself, wait, didn't we elect a moderator for this one? But I feel like that didn't happen. So am I wrong? Is there somebody who's waiting to lead a discussion that I'm just having a moment and I've forgotten that that's happening today?
Kristen, this is Dawn from Health Alliance. I don't recall seeing that.
Hi there, Dawn. Oh, good. I really was having a moment here. I was frantically looking through my email, and I thought to myself, I feel that we decided on a theme for today's call, but perhaps I'm mistaken. If that actually is the case, and now I've made that person feel bad, definitely feel free to chat with me privately, and you can call me out privately if you prefer. But there's always plenty to talk about, that's for sure. So I guess I'll just open it up to the floor. Does anybody have a burning question that you were saving for your risk adjustment colleagues here on this call? It is an open discussion. So if anyone has a theme you want to put on the floor, now's a great time.
Hey, Kristen. It's Jess from Health New England.
How many points do you have, Jess?
I don't know. But I have a question. I have a legit question that I am burning to hear what my colleagues have to say. And it's kind of a follow-up to a topic that we chatted briefly about when many of us were together in Orlando earlier in the year. But we're going through our contracting process and making some modifications to some of our care management expectations and P4P and the stipulations that we put in our provider contracts. And I'm just wondering if anybody has had any luck putting in language that would encourage provider participation in the way of giving records more freely, adapting to the feedback that's provided, improving, you know, their documentation accuracy, anything like that. If anybody has any insight or is doing anything with their contracts around incenting providers to be better from a coding and documentation standpoint, I'd love to hear it.
Hey, Jess, this is Deb with Paramount, and I think we're in the initial stages, like you, where we're talking with contracting, where we think it's time, where we make this a priority to make it part of their contract. So we're looking to do this in 2018, and as a matter of fact, yesterday I had a hallway conversation, so you know, because you know those are the most productive conversations, with one of the team leads who's doing our value-based contracting as well as the CPC, because we also do Medicaid. So I'm actually going to now start being a part of the committee, and we're going to start meeting monthly to start talking more about what we want to see in these contracts as we start renewing some of our physician contracts and all of the above, physician education, timely filing of claims, completeness of codes that they submit, accuracy of the codes they submit. There was one more that I'm missing. It'll come to me, but yes. So we're trying to start beefing up accessibility. There you go. Giving us EMR access to see if we couldn't partner to get some additional access to their records.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much in alignment with what I'm starting to draft up, because we're having some challenges in some of the outer reaches of our network where the practices are smaller, they're not necessarily tied into sort of large PHOs that we have a relationship with, and they're just giving us a really hard time about getting in, getting access to records, taking in feedback, so I think we're on the same page. I will, once I have a draft, Deb, if you don't mind, I might just send it over to you so that we could share and compare and see if we're sort of tracking in the right direction.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, Kristen, that's it.
That's a great one. Are any others in the line working on similar initiatives? Anyone else have insights or thoughts on this topic?
This is Danielle at CHPW. I guess I had never really thought about putting or incentivizing provider in the contract for coding accuracy. Have you thought through how you would measure that within the contract? Like, would you pick a sample and have a outside coding source code it, and or see how many extra codes were found, or what's the idea around that?
So for right now, I'm thinking about more the audit exposure part that I want to put into language. So as my coders are going out and doing retro reviews and finding unsubstantiated codes that result in us having to do retractions, trying to measure what percentage of all their submitted diags ultimately have to be retracted, but and then eventually working the other way as well. I have to give some more thought because I agree it's sort of a challenge how you measure sort of the undercoding that might be happening. And, you know, I'm always sensitive to that. That's a very fine line to try and tie dollars to or incent right. providers around, you know, I never wanted to be construed as incenting providers to upcode. but I think it's safer to put hooks in that says, if you're chronically submitting diags that aren't substantiated, that's a problem, and we need to hold you accountable for that.
Yeah, Jess, I think we're taking the same avenue, and we certainly call it accurate coding, so I don't think we've gone away from whether we add or delete if it's accurate. So when we do our reviews, we actually provide, we started something with our sister, ProMedica, PPG, ProMedica Physician Group, where we actually give them results and kind of give them, like, we look for 95% accuracy, and we're looking at how many did we have to add or delete, so basically how many were wrong. So it's just, that's kind of where we go with the percentages if we're doing, because our internal coders get audited, so when our auditor audits them, it's, did they add them appropriately, did they delete them appropriately, and then if our auditor has to add or delete, if they didn't do it. So it's a percentage based on that.
That's interesting. That's a good idea.
And when you say coder versus auditor, the coder is the one at the physician group and the auditor is the one at the plan?
No. We have internal coders that do the reviews, and then we have a coder who is our auditor that audits the coders.
Okay. Gotcha.
Hey, Deb, my Brenda Chavez on my team is in the office, and I'd love to connect her with one of your auditors. She's just sort of newly coming into an auditing role on my team, and I think she's just trying to find friends. So if we can connect them, that might be great.
It's Kelly. Kelly is her name with an I, K-E-L-L-I, and she's on the phone. She's just
oh, okay. Hi, Kelly.
Here.
Hi, Kelly.
So it's okay. Kelly Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R, at ProMedica.org, just like mine.
Okay.
But it's with
well,
an
I think we just made a friend connection, and I'll connect you guys via email.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Alpine Alliance, better than Match.com. Kelly, you might get 32 emails, because now we have 30 folks on the line.
Just swipe to the right, is that what it is? I don't know. I've been married 26 years. I have no idea what it is. Is it five, right or left? What is the
right?
I don't
me.
Have
it's
it.
Right.
I don't know. Oh. Oh, I'm not on mute. I'm so sorry. I thought I muted. That's okay. Half of them know me anyway, right? Right, Jess?
All right.
Sorry, I couldn't hear your comments over the laughing over here, Deb. Sorry.
So this is a great kickoff, Jess. Thanks for that. So looking at how we're looking at incorporating documentation best practices into these P4P contracts and kind of expanding that pay for value, right? To not just be about quality of the care, but also the quality of the documentation of that care. The other folks on the line, any other contributions or questions? You're mulling over this similar approach.
Hey, Kristen, this is Amber Harris with Medigold. I'm kind of coming in a little bit late, and I just kind of heard the conversation about the auditors that are in place. And just to kind of give a heads up, I have two brand-new coding auditors. So if there's any way that you could send out the information, I'd love to touch base with the other groups.
So I think that the conversation that you just came in on, it sounds like we have a lot of new auditors that are getting hired. Maybe we need to do a quick roundtable call just for new coding auditors to have a meet and greet or something. Let me find a spot on our calendar, and we could host a roundtable if you guys want to do that, or if you guys want to do it offline on your own schedules. Any preference there?
There is enthusiastic nodding on the Health New England side to have HPA host a roundtable on that.
Yes, okay. We're nodding enthusiastically in our room as well.
Yeah, Paramount's so excited about that as well.
Okay. All right, so now I'm laughing. You guys are nodding and I'm laughing. So now we're going to have a coding work group, risk adjustment strategy work group, and then we'll have an auditor work group too. All right, you guys are keeping me gainfully employed. I appreciate that. All right, we're at our roundtable call. All right, no problem. I will get one on the calendar and get that out to the group.
Kristen, we appreciate you.
We could take.
I appreciate you. Guys, make sure that I have paychecks. I like it. Everybody wins. All right. Okay. Other topics for the group. Other conversation items people are excited to talk about on a Friday afternoon in risk adjustments.
Hi, this is Rebecca Turner, and I'm from Community Care in Tulsa. And as long as we're talking about audits anyway, we use an outside vendor to do medical record review and provide as and deletes for Medicare Advantage, and we also do ACA risk adjustment for us as well. We're thinking about having an outside firm audit that vendor for us. Does anybody have any experience with that, or does everybody do it themselves? We're kind of new at this, so.
Rebecca, this is Kristen. I don't have an answer for you. I have a clarifying question, actually. So when you say to have an outside firm conduct the audit on your behalf, are you talking about an on-site audit? Are you talking about a desk audit or kind of all the above?
I don't know that we've gotten that far in the conversations. Our board of directors is very concerned about the whole United lawsuit, and so they're kind of trying to figure out what we can do to cover ourselves to make sure that we wouldn't get in trouble if the DOJ showed up on our door, and that was kind of the idea they came up with, was having somebody audit our vendor.
Okay.
I don't have any further detail to that.
So, Rebecca, this is Jess DuPont from Health New England. Two suggestions. One, I believe, and I don't think my friend Jason's on the phone. Jason from Select. You're not there, right? Or is the team from Select Health actually on the phone? Maybe not. So Jason Brockett. Oh, you are? Hi.
Jessica from Select Health.
You work with Jason, right?
Specifically in I'm actually in a different department. He handles all the risk adjustment. My team handles encounter submission.
Gotcha. I seem to recall a conversation with Jason that maybe Select had contracted with someone to do this exact work maybe last year. So I don't know, Jessica, if you have any context on that, or maybe Rebecca could just reach out to Jason. But I think that Jason did contract with an auditor to review some work that he had a vendor doing.
Probably best to check with him, because his operations are a little separated from ours, so I'm not sure of all the things that they've done.
Gotcha. Yeah, so Rebecca, so it's Jason Brockett at Select Health. He's the risk adjustment manager. You may just want to shoot him an email, and you can tell him that I may have unintentionally put him on the spot on the call, but I think they use someone. The other group that does that kind of overread type work, and they did different work for us, but sort of in a similar vein, is DST's consulting group. I think they do some of that sort of auditing type work to validate what your vendor is doing.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Dawn Peterson. I have a follow-up question. Are you an integrated health system or are you independent?
What do you mean by integrated?
Do you have a health plan that's owned and operated by a hospital and a provider group that has coding?
We're actually owned by two different hospital systems.
Okay. So I wanted to suggest something, and I wanted to make sure that my suggestion would work for you. Our integrated system, when we first started an internal coding program, our coders reported up through the leadership structure in the hospital with the health information management inpatient leadership. And what they did at that time was they used their vendor that they use for inpatient auditing. So they would hire the vendor to do a review of the accuracy of their inpatient coders. They would use that vendor to also audit the risk adjustment coding that was happening. So I didn't know if you wanted to maybe explore tapping into their vendor contracts that are already in place. It might be a cost-effective way to do the audit.
Okay. I'll have to talk to the hospitals about that and figure out what they've got going on. But thank you very much.
Yeah, you've got two choices there. So.
Rebecca,
hi.
This is Deb. Do you have internal coders? Because I agree, you should have some sort of internal controls that you have when you have a vendor doing external reviews for you. You should have some sort of internal control. You have already have an outside vendor doing the reviews, so I think you should have some sort of internal auditing. So if you could maybe go to your board and maybe potentially vie for some sort of full-time auditor, that would be great, a coding auditor. If they don't go for that, we've also used Altegra to do coding reviews for us, and they did a really good job for us. But they're now Change Healthcare, so I don't know if you'll find them under Altegra or Change because they've changed their name.
Okay. We have told them that we really want to have an internal coder that does that. We've got a few in the company, but they work mainly in the QI department. So getting them to do this kind of thing isn't really an option. So we have put forward that we really need to have a full-time coder that works on this type of stuff, and we've gotten some good feedback. It's just that we haven't gotten permission to hire anybody yet, and the board is really wanting us to do something this year about it, so that's kind of why we're looking at the vendor option.
Hi, this is Nock from Santa Clara Family Health Plan, and we got approval for an internal person to review our vendor. So I'm just concerned, like, where do you guys go recruit people who have this HCC knowledge? And are they mainly remote, or they actually work in the office?
We grabbed ours from the hospital coding staff. So.
Okay. Do they usually
I'm
come
sorry,
with
who was that voice? That was a new voice.
This is Chris Django with Scott My Health Plan.
Wonderful. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't catch who asked the question. This is Deb, but.
This, yeah, Nock from Santa Clara Family Health Plan.
Okay, we hire coders because I've always felt, coding is coding. You teach them risk, and then they become specialized in risk coders, so if you're auditing codes, if you get yourself a coder, they're always going to code to the highest specificity. Then you can kind of teach them the CMS rules and regulations, and you train them to understand risk. Our auditor, we have special qualifications. They have to understand risk and know the rules, but they have to be a coder.
Right, the certified coder part. Not being a coder, I didn't know if there were some different training to get at the risk adjustment verification, like those tamper perspective, or whether all coders look for that.
This is Dawn Peterson at Health Alliance. There is a coding certification offered by the American Academy of Professional Coders. I think they just go by AAPC nowadays. And it's directed towards risk adjustment coding. It's put on by a risk adjustment coder in the industry. His name is Brian. I can't remember his last name, but he developed He developed the curriculum. I've had a few of my coders go for the certification, but all of the coders have a base certification of either a HEMA certification or AAPC certification. There are many programs out there that offer training for coding, but truly I found that those are the best certification programs. They have the most longevity for coders, and they're the most widely considered. In order to find one in your community, it might be helpful to go out to the AAPC website and type in your location to see if there's a local chapter.
Okay.
You could also do that on AHIMA to see if there's a local chapter, because I'm sure that there's coders hiding in your area that would be interested.
Okay, great advice. I just didn't know if, you know, requiring HCC experience is critical, especially if you say if they have experience as a coder and they can just take these specialized classes, they'll be good to go. I didn't know how much to emphasize that.
Yeah, so it's basically taking that general certification, like the CPC, yeah, and carving out the diagnosis piece, and then adding a few CMS elements on top of it. So it's just more specialized and something they should already be proficient in.
Okay, great. That's good information. I have a question on the do you guys go audit what the MA-004 has included as risk adjustment qualified?
Yes.
We talk a lot about chart reviews, but you do.
We reconcile. We have just, and this is Dawn again. Kristen, shut me up if I'm talking too much. But we reconcile our wraps against our encounter data submission, accepted submission, and against the MA-004 that comes back. It's taken us about 9 months to get to a good place in reconciling it, but I think we're as close as we've ever been at this point. We only had 54 instances out of all of our submissions that we had to data mine using this. It's a table that we sat down and created with our encounter team and our internal information management team to see how the system can pull the data out. Prior to being able to get to these 54 lines to review, we had thousands upon thousands of lines that we were having our coders go in and look at to validate. So if you have a team that you can work with and cross-departmentalize this reconciliation to look at it at the claim acceptance level followed by the HCC level, don't go down to the diagnosis code level because it's too much, but just stay at that HCC level, you'll get good information.
But how do you? I'm sorry, this is Chris again. Would you mind going into a little bit more detail on how you set that up and what your data flow looks like? So it sounds like you're probably capturing your outbound data to your vendor, your RA vendor, edge server, internally, and then there are certain reports that you're bringing back to compare. How are you actually doing that reconciliation work?
Sure. So everything's in-house. So our IT department is actually doing our wrap submission and our encounter submission for the Medicare Advantage product. We do vendor out our edge with commercial. That's different. Our vendor helps us with that. But as far as MA, everything is pulled from our internal system.
Okay.
So basically your wraps is based on your encounter or your claims, right?
No. Wraps is, it's really the
source data. The source data is based on your claim, and you have the wraps filter.
Right.
So I guess it's like, so pretty much there shouldn't be differences between your claims and your wraps other than maybe chart review related stuff.
Chart review is included in our wraps. So we have a chart review indicator that we created that we could make sure that we capture chart review.
So
yeah.
Right now, you know, our vendor for Encounter is applying the same EDPS, MA-04, before it gets submitted as a wrap. So, you know, with the CMS webinar last week or something, they were saying if it's like a inpatient type TOB, everything gets counted, right? But our vendor is applying a specialty, whether, you know, that, you know, if it's all lab code on that TOB of inpatient, they're not moving it over to wraps, which is okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. So, but they will appear on the MAO4 per CMS for that inpatient, right?
Right.
So what do you do when you say you audit? So it will appear on the MAO4. It won't go over to the RAP side because of maybe all those CPTs are excluded, CPT?
It's my understanding that they cleaned up the MA-004, and the Phase 3 version 2, I thought they cleaned that all up.
Right, but last week webinar, they said that... Go ahead, sorry.
I'm sorry. That example that you just gave, that type of bill, it's kind of a bad example because that type of bill won't show up on the MA-004 because it's not a RAPS eligible, it's not a risk adjustment eligible bill. The only things that show up on the MAO4 are if it's risk eligible. So labs aren't risk eligible. So that's not the kind of things that you're going to be reconciling RAPS to EDS. So you know that, you know, we do the filtering for RAPS. CMS is the filtering for EDS. So so when they're talking about, they don't even waste putting that bill with all lab codes through RAPS, it's because it's not going to go through RAPS. And if it goes through EDS, CMS isn't going to put that on the MAO4 because it's all lab codes.
Yeah, and that's why you have to look at all three reporting systems because it might be on your EDPS. It might be on that piece, but it should not be on your RAPS, and it should not be on your MAO4.
Okay, yes. I guess maybe I misunderstood because on the webinar, the Fed say that, you know, these goes on the MA-004 and type of bill inpatient, if it hits one of those type of bill, you know, those diagnoses go. They don't look at the procedure level on an inpatient facility is my understanding. So that's why I think that for those claims, they will appear on the MA-004 because they met the type of bill. That's the only criteria for EDPS filter for MA-004. But obviously they won't go on the RAP side because of the procedure code. Maybe I'm misunderstanding, but so I thought that for sure that would be the discrepancy in diagnoses between MAO4 and RAP's response. And then
it may be a discrepancy in MAO2. Could that be a, I might be speaking out of class on this one.
Not MAO2 because that's all whether an encounter is accepted or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of risk adjustment.
Are you talking about the RAPS and EDS phone call they had?
Yeah. Well, you know they have those monthly calls
with
their
user.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. If I recall, because we were sitting on that, they were talking about the logic that they use, the filtering logic that they're using, and it was a refresh, and they do filter to the PROC code. So they're filtering those
only for outpatient facility, but not inpatient. Inpatient is just based on type of bill is what, you know, is written.
I'll go back and look at that, but I was pretty positive that they're breaking that down. Because that would, they
I think they have to go together.
Yeah.
They have to match up.
Yeah.
This is Allison Denton from Aspire Health Plan. And I have a question. I think, was that Dawn Peterson speaking earlier about the reconciliation?
Yes.
I'm wondering, I know before, I think that you were on the Storin system. Are you still using Storin now, Tessalit?
We are. We are supplementing with other items, but, yeah, we're still using that.
Yeah, so
okay.
where I'm at is, you know, we've kind of got our arms around the clinical gap closure, but we don't yet have the tools to do the EDPS to RAP financial reconciliation, and I'm wondering what other tools besides what's available in Tessalit you're using, because they're not submitting for us either. Our core system vendor, our claims administrator, submits, and they don't have any reports developed, so we need to either develop something or look at a vendor tool to help us identify where we have missed a submission. And I'm just wondering what tools you've used.
It took many months, but we built it ourselves. We're not using any vendor to help us with this. We weren't able to find vendors that we already had here at Health Alliance, Tessalit. We also use Milliman. We weren't able to get anything from the tools that they have, so we had to sit at a table with our internal IT that does our submissions for us and our information management and come to an agreement on how our system can produce this for us.
And are you using any data from Tessalit in order to produce your reports, or is it all just coming from other internal, your original source data?
So what we're doing with the Tessalit data is we have made sure that the chart reviews are indicated with a chart review indicator that our IT person had put into place so that we are including chart reviews, both linked and unlinked, and our HRAs that we're processing through Tessalit. But other than that, we're using the MA-004s from CMS and our internal system.
And are you just creating kind of a spreadsheet that shows the percent of the number of claims and then the percent that are accepted at each stage of the submission?
It is in an Excel format at the member HCC level.
So you have it by members and then their HCCs underneath and then whether or not they've been submitted to both?
We look at all three. So we're cross-referencing to see where the HCC is supported or not supported on RAPS, encounter, accepted, and MA-004. And then we get the outliers to look at.
And you're looking at the member level?
The member HCC level, yes.
Okay. So when you go and look at the outliers, then are you requesting records and then viewing it from a tamper perspective too?
We're reviewing it at all levels that are available. So the first thing that we will do is we will go in to see if a coder has touched that member. For that calendar year, so for 2015 in this instance, we'd look into our Tessalit store and product to see what's in there. We would then, if we need to get into our claim system, go and find where the HCC was or should be in the claim system. And then we have access to EMR, to a good number of EMR systems with our provider groups. And we also keep our records from our chart review periods and in a repository. So if we have the record, great. But for this exercise, for 2015 dates of service, because it's already closed, we're not doing a chart retrieval for these one-offs. But if we have the record, we will look. Or if a coder's already looked at it, we will, That'll give us an indication of why wasn't it there if our coder says it should be there.
Okay. Do you prioritize because it could be very intensive list of differences?
Yes. Yeah. We have our IT staff are prioritizing by the error code that hit. So, okay. For instance, when we were doing this back in January, in preparation for our manager Jaretta's presentation that she partnered with in, I'm trying to remember where we went, in Orlando.
Orlando.
Thank you. I almost said New Mexico. I'm like, no, Orlando. So when she was prepping for that, we just did a RAPS look back, and it was, I think it was around 20,000 lines that we had to prioritize. And then in May, we did it again, and it was probably 13 to 20,000 lines. And then finally, we were able to get it down when we put in this reconciliation report. We got it down to 54 lines of what we had to look at. So
Okay, from the three sources. If they appear in the three sources, you're going to assume that they're okay?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, okay.
And if it's not on encounter, the encounter source, then there's no way it's going to be on the MAO source, because the only way it can get on MAO is if it's an encounter.
It's in MAO 2 as accepted, yes. I mean, it has to be MAO 2 accepted to get on MAO 4.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to go back to the MAO 4. So I found the page and basically disallowed a lot, diagnoses for inpatient only has to answer the question, is the type of bill allowable for risk adjustment? So there's no procedure, unlike professional and outpatient. So I would love to hear what this community is interpreting it as. So basically what appears on the MAO-4 for inpatient bill type is very straightforward for CMS, and so it might be more than what a chart review or even a RAP creation is. And in the memo for CMS on December 2015 for inpatient encounter record, type of bill is the only thing that is a filter for MAO-4. So that's what we're struggling with, is whether our filter for RAPs is too stringent for inpatient compared to what CMS is including.
Do you have examples that you've been able to look back at to see if it's only labs, inpatient labs, or if there's something else like the DRG or?
Yeah, right now our system actually blocks those from being in a RAP. So it's just that these languages and presentation by CMS make us wonder if we should even block it. But, yeah, we'll have to look at the MAO-4 and see, which claim ID is only lab and things like that that appeared on the MAO-4.
You piqued my interest.
Yeah,
I'm going to take away and see if we can look back and see on our.
I'll forward the presentation to Kristen to potentially forward to others.
Oh yeah, no worries. We can post that out on this risk adjustment discussion forum, and that way folks can take a look at it and see if they have how they're interpreting it, that type of thing. Because it sounds like you're right, that may be an opportunity for you guys to see if maybe you're blocking out something that you need to allow through. That's great. So just want to circle back really quickly. Allison, I know you were getting a lot of good info out of Dawn. Did you have follow-up questions for her about the report that they've built in-house?
I'm sure most definitely. Since, they're using Teslit, Dawn, I'm wondering if I can call you sometime maybe late next week and just talk offline.
That would be great. I would love to be able to talk to you, too.
Yeah. So I'm out of office early next week, but I'll go ahead and give you a call. We can set up a time to talk specifically about the Teslit tool and how it all plays into the report that you've built, because it's exactly what I need to work on to try to get our arms wrapped around where we're at.
Okay.
Actually, this is Nog. I would love to hear how, the fields that you use from those sources and your logic to derive at variances. List, so that we can create that, too, even if our systems are not the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Dawn,
go ahead, Kristen.
Do you think it might make sense to consider pulling in maybe Dreda and a few other of your stakeholders that we could do, not a case study per se, but we could set up the visual on the webinar. So if you guys wanted to do screen share or whatever, and you could just kind of walk folks through, it's more like an informal case study, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Pam Walsh and I, Pam Walsh is our IT person. We just gave a presentation at the 2017 Government Healthcare Congress last week about our reconciliation. It's still very early. This is the first report that we've received, but I'm willing to share this with anyone. I'm sure that there are a lot of plans out there that have pain points with this reconciliation at the HCC level. To mention the pain points at the risk score level. So,
yeah.
Kristen, if you want to set something up, please.
Okay, cool. So I'll follow up with you with some potential dates that we have on the calendar. Now, that won't be as quick as, you know, like Allison's mentioning, end of next week. So for those who are, you know, wanting to connect with Dawn individually, you know, obviously take that offline. But I'll endeavor to set up a call. That way lots of folks can, you know, engage in that. And, Dawn, I have to say I'm a little jealous that some other organization got that case study before I did. I'm just saying.
It was not even
cool,
a case.
Man.
It was not even a case study. It was like a hey.
Not feeling
right.
Loved on.
Yeah. I'm hoping to have a good case study after we get the payment and everything in the fall, because you know we're not going to know anything. I would say we're not going to know anything until February maybe of 2018 on where we're landing with our true up for our 9-10 encounter payment for 2015 days of service. So
I have a question. So let's say you found something that shouldn't have been on the MA04. Do you go back to that encounter and actually delete that diagnosis, even though it came from the provider claim or whatever?
We have not encountered that yet, but if we were to encounter that, we would send that to CMS and question them why it was on there. I mean, I think that's part of the due diligence. I think someone said it earlier, it's about coding accuracy. So, I mean, if there's a delete to be deleted, we need to delete it. So if that were to come up, we would.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I guess then, you know, if that was the primary diagnosis on that claim, then, you know, do you change what becomes primary for that claim, even though it came from the provider? I think that's what we're going to be challenged with. So what do we do with this information?
You can't really change the claim because the claim's not yours.
Right.
Or the health plan.
Right.
But as far as the reporting, you might lose that HCC. If that's the only diagnosis code on the claim, then I think that situation, I think that's a questionable situation for anybody out there. And if anyone else has a way that they've found that's best to face that, please share. You know, go back and say, oh, sorry, provider, your diagnosis code's wrong, so now we're going to ask for recoup of that claim?
Right.
Or do you put a dummy diagnosis code, just like a, you know, an arbitrarial diagnosis, and then it's out of your encounter acceptance and out of your wraps. I mean, there are many different ways. CMS doesn't give us a way
right.
to handle that. They leave it up to the health plan. So,
yeah.
Luckily, with Medicare Advantage and the ability to do unlinked chart reviews and retro, it's better than, let's say, like Medicaid, where you get what you get and you have to deny it back to the provider. But, yeah, personally, like, I'm interested in hearing others talk about
right.
that.
Right, right. Okay, great. So I also have a question about plans that are doing natural language or OCR. Has it been, you know, more efficient than if your coder went in and did it without?
This is Jess DuPont from Health New England. We're using the Health Fidelity tool currently, their NLP, which is called HCC Scout. It's been a little bit of a bumpy road to implementation. We originally had three provider groups lined up that were going to allow us to do the extraction. We've only successfully implemented one. One backed out, and we're about halfway through the implementation with the last one. I will say from an efficiency standpoint, it did definitely speed up the process. and really weeded out the charts that didn't have at least what the NLP felt, anything for the coders to review. Now, we do, you know, I had heard some cautions from my fellow HPA friends who had done some work with NLPs. I think we're going to circle back and just do some spot checks for charts that the NLP determined there was nothing additional to code, just to make sure we believe that, and give that feedback to Health Fidelity, because their NLP, it is progressive, right? It continues to learn the more you give it feedback. So we're going to be doing some independent verification, but so far it has been worth every penny in terms of the time efficiency, and increasing the capacity of my team to get through more without any adds to staff.
Okay. Is it just type written that they can do, or even handwritten too?
No handwritten. It's PDF, and it does read the text for the most part. There can be some glitchy things, depending on how the electronic record is sort of pulled out. We're also trying a new sort of method that we're working with Health Fidelity on. Instead of using their traditional method, which is basically like a screen scrape, it goes in, creates a PDF of the record, and then loads it into their NLP to read. With our parent, we're actually going to be doing an API data extraction, so basically pulling the data from the back end of the EMR system for the NLP to read, and we hope that that'll come through a little bit cleaner. So it will allow the system to read it more efficiently and not have so many fallouts.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, everybody. This is Kristen. Any other comments, responses regarding natural language processing?
So we use Versen for our chart review. Are any of those vendors using that? As well, so that is not really a separate vendor that you're aware of?
This is Jeff again. I'm not sure about Versen. You'd have to check with them. I do know Pulse8's risk adjustment platform does have an NLP functionality built into it. So when you buy their whole package, they can sell you their NLP that hooks into the EMR, and then it flows right into their coding tool.
Okay.
We have a couple Pulse8 clients on the phone. Does anybody on the line that uses Pulse8 also use their NLP?
It's a separate module that you have to purchase. This is Deb. And we are looking into potentially purchasing that module. It's just we've had a few other things on the burner.
Yeah, and this is Chris Drango with Scott and White. We are definitely looking at it, but we have not pulled the trigger on it either.
Yeah, and this is Amber with Medigold. We're in the same boat. We're implementing with Pulse8, but we don't have that module as of yet.
All right, thanks, guys. Well, I'm gonna hijack the conversation for a few minutes. This is Kristen again with the Alliance. I came to the call with an agenda item as well, and that is, believe it or not, we're at the end of July. I have to pick the place and date for our 2018 risk adjustment meeting, and if you guys like, you can have a vote. You can have a vote today. I go into the office in 2 weeks, and that's when we plan our calendar for 2018. So wanted to take a few minutes to raise the question to ask folks if there's any requests in terms of location or date for our 2018 meeting. In years past, it seems to me that doing it in January and February tends to work best. This year when we were in Orlando, the feedback I got from the group was that February was better than January, so I guess looking to reconfirm if that's the case. Let me pause there and just ask about timing.
This is Allison from Aspire. I find the January-February timeframe challenging because I'm also responsible for HEDIS. So that's why I couldn't attend. So if it works for everybody else, I understand, but February is not really a time that I can get away.
Thanks for the feedback, Allison. What is your perfect month, just out of curiosity?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
what's
I
the one month that you don't have
right
any work
after
to
HEDIS
do?
Ends? Yeah, exactly. you know, I think that, you know, kind of when HEDIS wraps up in mid-May, there tends to be a little bit of a lull. We're chasing charts for audit for risk adjustment, but the summer tends to be better.
We are just sitting here. This is Paramount. We were agreeing late May, after HEDIS, after ACA submission, after March, January, March sweeps. February is very difficult for us as well due to ACA. If you're in the ACA world, that's prime time for supplemental submissions for ACA and HEDIS.
Great.
I agree with
the group on Sunday.
I think that would be great.
Late May or early May? I'm hearing late May. Is that right?
Yeah.
Late May after HEDIS.
Okay. All right. Okay. So late May after HEDIS. And then that actually dovetails nicely with another question I had, which was around combining topics potentially. So I don't think anyone on this call was with us in Wisconsin last week. Was there anyone here that did join us for our Medicare Advantage Value visit?
No, but I heard good things about it.
Darn tootin', it's awesome. Well, so what we did at that value visit that was a little unique was we actually did two value visits co-located. So we did a quality value visit that was on Tuesday and bled over into Wednesday, and then we did a Medicare Advantage value visit that started on Wednesday and then went through Friday. And so then the Wednesday, no surprise, that day focused on stars for the two groups. So during the quality portion of that value visit, so I was in a room filled with people, and they were not all Medicare Advantage people, there was actually a lot of really vigorous conversation about risk adjustment. And like Jess brought up at the very top of our call, looking at ways that we can more closely align efforts around risk adjustment with efforts around quality. So it occurred to me, I wanted to ask the group, if there's value in doing a similar program where we would actually block out 4 days in a week and we would design the agenda with the intention that the front end of those 4 days, so two of those would be loaded with one audience in mind, and then the second 2 days would be loaded with the second audience in mind with a little bit of overlap in between. Some folks will pop in just for 2 days and fly out. Some folks will stay all four, and some somewhere in between. So I want to gut check that and see, does that idea of taking this group and putting you in the same room with quality people, is that interesting? Is it not interesting? Is there enough overlap there that there's value in having that cross collaboration? Or is it dilute the value of the risk adjustment meeting because then you're opening up the focus a little bit too much perhaps?
I think it dilutes it because it's a lot. I mean, I think there are places where we could do the chart retrieval together and help in that aspect. Or maybe there are some administrative HEDIS measures that coders can look for. But I've been in conferences where they're both there, and really getting that target audience, it's hard because you have, well, just like in Orlando, we had actuaries that came to talk about risk adjustment that are sitting in a room when we might go down a conversation with more of the clinical aspect that a HEDIS has. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree with Alex Fire, and, you know, I almost think that, you know, I think that that's a really good point, separating the financial and the clinical, because I would agree. I mean, there is some overlap in some ways as far as your strategies for provider education and chart retrieval. But, you know, I've tried attending conferences that combine them both, and they just touch the treetops. And really what I think we're looking for is the in-depth, like, especially like bid season. How do you, you know, what's a good standard industry-wide process for forecasting your risk adjustment improvement for the bid, as an example? You don't get that level of detail at the conferences if you're combining the topics.
Hey, Kristen, this is Jess. So I guess maybe, and I apologize because I wasn't in Madison, I guess my understanding of sort of co-locating two conferences is that it still allows for the deep dive into a specific subject. So say 2 days just dedicated to the risk adjustment topics and then 2 days dedicated to, say, the quality topic with just a little time in between where the two audiences overlap. Is that how it's intended, or is it intended to be blended of multiple topics the entire time?
The former. So on Tuesday in Madison, so I think that's a great question, Jess. Thank you for the clarification. The so what I'm putting out there for the group is that we would have two different value visits. You would register for one or you would register for both. And I'm making this up as I say it. So, like, on Tuesday, we would have a whole day. It's nothing but, you know, NCQA accreditation or something totally quality-driven that I don't know anything about because that's Sarah Neese on our team that runs that, not me. And then on Wednesday, Sarah and I would sit down at a negotiating table and figure out what topics we both care about in terms of risk adjustment and quality. So that might be all about provider contracting, for example. Again, I'm making this up without any research. But then on Thursday, we would have, you know, a totally geek-out morning all about chart coding, if that's what you guys want to talk about on Thursday morning. And then we could let Ed come and talk about actuarial, more geek-out, and my head will hurt. It'll be amazing. And we could go into financial stuff on Friday. So I made up that agenda in the last 30 seconds. But, yeah, that's the idea, right, is that the people who come on Tuesday, they're going to fly out on Wednesday. They're not going to stay for the Thursday conversation.
This is not. I think I like that idea because sometimes I think analytics, the meeting in September is also related to risk adjustment, too, because it's financial and how do you look at all these reports that, you know, Deb talked about from an analytical view to give you action. So, to me, those two fit together nicely, too.
I do like this idea of co-locating, and honestly, I think I had an even different sort of combo option when I think about the struggles that we have with sort of integrating with our delivery system and our providers. I know historically that, and I don't remember the name of what it's called, but the value visit that you have when you have the health plans come with the health system people, but maybe there's an opportunity to do something with that, since I think we've talked a lot about how we can leverage our systems better to and those relationships to improve risk adjustment.
And Kristen, I don't know what the answer is. I just don't know if 4 days, if you had that one person that would want to go to all four, a company is going to commit to letting somebody be all four unless, like Casey, one of our coders said, it was a Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, that way you're only gone 2 days in one of each week. But maybe if you could condense it, I see the value in quality and risk and see how we can bring the two together. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a value in there because I think the providers in the community are getting very frustrated, especially in the heart of HEDIS time when we're asking for ACA records and we've got our quality team asking for HEDIS records, and then they're like, didn't I just give you that? I'm like, no, that was our quality team. Well, come on, get your act together. And they're getting very frustrated, and we have to come on site, and they go, oh, you were here yesterday. No, I really wasn't here yesterday. I haven't been there in 2 years. And they're like, no, you were. And we're like, no, you were. And so it's like, I think there is value to combining efforts and how that's done and what a value looks like. I don't know the answer, so I'm with you, Kristen, but I see a value in it.
Gotcha. Thank you. So to Jess's comment, that health system one, Jess, I'll take that back and noodle on it. It's a tricky one because it's the health plan / health system value visit. That's the historic name, super fancy stuff. And that one's an executive level, so that room is filled with CEOs from both levels. So if we tacked on, I think it really, like, one group would be leaving and one group would be coming in. But I hear you that it's absolutely an intersection point. So with that, I am watching the clock, and my clock did just ping at me that we're exactly on the button here. So I'll take that back, and I'll talk to you all again at the end of the month of August, and so I'll be able to share, you know, what we're thinking. And it won't be blessed until the board, the Health Plan Alliance Governing Board, votes on it in the end of September. So we have some time here, but wanted to get the feel from this group. But I know you guys really value this time together. I know digging in the weeds is really what you want to be able to do, and my job is to protect that opportunity for you. So that's why I wanted to raise it. I know I had a few homework items from this call. I will work on getting some of those dates on the calendar for all of you, for your auditors to get together. And Don, thanks in advance for offering to do a walkthrough in more detail around some of the efforts your team is doing. And then I know some folks, we had suggestions like for Rebecca to connect with Jason. If anyone needs any help connecting with anyone else, feel free to email me. I'm happy to do an email introduction. And, of course, everyone's contact information is on the directory behind your login on the HealthPlan Alliance website. So with that, our next call for this group is the last Friday of August, I believe. That is August 25th. So I will look forward to hearing everyone's voices again then. I was very excited to hear some new voices on the call today, and I'm glad that you guys are valuing this forum.
Well,
Thanks, Kristen.
All right. You're very welcome, everybody.
Thanks,
have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.